Radio Prague News.
An international military trade fair for NATO and Partnership for Peace members has begun in Prague. The Daily Pravo reports that working hours in the Czech Republic are the third highest in Europe. And archaeologists have uncovered a unique 2,000-year-old structure near Karlovy Vary. A major international military exhibition for NATO and Partnership for Peace members has begun in Prague. The Future Soldier Trade Fair, featuring over 100 commercial exhibitors from 25 countries, runs until Saturday in Letňany, on the outskirts of the city. Delegates to a concurrent conference called Urban Peacekeepers will discuss peacekeeping, dealing with asymmetric threats, and fighting terrorism. The Czech Republic is hosting Future Soldier every second year between 2008 and 2014. Working hours in the Czech Republic are the third longest in the European Union, according to the Daily Pravo. Citing the results of an international survey, the paper puts the average work week for Czechs at 42.9 hours, with one in four employees saying they work from 7:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. The survey, which maps key changes in employment over the last 50 years, suggests that two-fifths of employees do not leave the office for lunch breaks and devote an average of 42 minutes to their work in the evenings. Archaeologists have uncovered a prehistoric wooden structure at the hill of Vladaš near Karlovy Vary that they believe may be more than 2,000 years old. The structure was apparently part of a water reservoir that served a fortified settlement at the top of the 700-meter hill. Tests have found that the oak from which the structure's beams were hewn was cut sometime after the year 463 BC. The beams are to be preserved at the Museum of Archaeology and History in Lausanne, Switzerland, as the Czech Republic lacks an adequately equipped laboratory, and will be brought home to be exhibited a year later. Archaeologists involved in the work called it a discovery of Europe-wide, if not global, importance. More than 100 police officers are searching the Prague district of Troja for a young girl who went missing on Wednesday afternoon. 9-year-old Anichka was last seen leaving a group of friends after school and did not return home. A police dog found her bag and a bottle near an area of garden cottages near the Kobylisi metro station en route to her house. Mounted units and a helicopter with thermovision are also involved in the search. Detectives have reported that the area in which her items were found is frequented by drug users and homeless people. Now turning briefly to the weather, currently sunny conditions are expected to sour over the coming days, with cloudy skies on Friday and showers at the weekend, and daytime highs of 12 degrees Celsius. I'm Christian Falvey, and that's the end of the news.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Ruth Franíková. Coming up in today's program, Czechs go to the polls on Friday and Saturday in local and Senate elections. We ask, what are the issues at stake? 60 years after the foundation of an army unit that was in reality a communist labor camp, we speak to a man who survived the ordeal. And an environmental organization is calling for a tenfold increase in the amount of Czech territory given over to wild nature. Then in the last part of our program, we visit Villa Bílek in Prague, which has opened to the public after 2 years of renovation.
Every single part in this building has its special meaning. You can see little symbols, for example, on a furniture, you can see little symbols of grain stalks.
All that coming up, so please stay with us. Czechs around the country will be going to the polls on Friday and Saturday. Record numbers of candidates are running in elections for municipal councils, with one of the most interesting races expected in Prague. The Civic Democrats have dominated City Hall since the fall of communism, but could now lose for the first time. As well as choosing new local representatives, voters will also be deciding on 27 of the 81 seats in the Czech Senate. Jan Richter talked to political analyst Jiří Pehe about what is at stake in the weekend's elections.
Well, I think that the municipal elections will be actually a vote about local issues in the first place, but also about the government, or let's put it in a different way. It will be a vote that will have an impact on the government. And the reason for that is that two of the government parties, the Topo 9 party and the Public Affairs party, are new political subjects, parties that need to prove to themselves and to the electorate that they are actually viable political groups. And I think that in case of the Public Affairs Party in particular, it is really quite important what will happen in the municipal elections, because if this party doesn't do well, it could trigger a major conflict within the party and also problems within the ruling coalition.
Where do the opposition social democrats come in? The party itself hasn't had any kind of conference that will elect the new leadership. It's still run provisionally, really. Do you think that any kind of opposition to the government or disagreement with the government policies, do you think that this might make a really good result for them?
Well, I think that the social democrats know that in these municipal elections and Senate elections, they can only gain simply because they didn't expect to do extremely well. They never do well in municipal elections. It is a party that does much better on the central level. And that's why any good result, cities that Social Democrats will take, that is, they will finish first, will be a big success for them.
There is one issue that might put some pressure on the Social Democrats, and that is, if they do really well in the Senate elections, they might break the coalition majority in the upper house. Do you think that this will be the case?
Well, I think that the Social Democrats have a good chance to break the majority of the ruling coalition. They, in fact, under some circumstances, could win a majority on their own in the Senate. So they are in a very good position, and of course it would be important for them, I would say more for symbolic reasons than anything else, because quite frankly, any veto coming from the Senate can be easily defeated by the lower house, and it often happens. But of course, if the ruling coalition, for example, wanted to go ahead with constitutional changes that the Social Democrats do not want, or and that is perhaps even more important, changes in the electoral law, then the Social Democrats will have enough strength to block those changes, because on constitutional changes and on changes of the electoral law, the Senate cannot be voted down by the House.
Political analyst Jiří Pehe talking there to Jan Richter. Prague City Hall held a special ceremony on Thursday honouring Czechs forced in the Stalinist 1950s to serve in army units that were in reality nothing more than labour camps. An estimated 40,000 to 60,000 men, singled out as enemies of the regime, served in such units between the years 1950 and 1954, after which they were officially disbanded. But even 60 years later, the scars remain. Jan Wellinger has the story.
The Pomocné technické prapory, technical assistance battalions, were first established on September 1, 1950, and lasted for 4 years. All the same, even now, they've lost little in notoriety. Tens of thousands of men, both young and older, who had been dubbed enemies of the state, were forced to serve, carrying no weapons, suffering hard labor, and experiencing constant harassment. One of the people forced to serve was 81-year-old Miroslav Ružička, now the head of the Czech Confederation of Political Prisoners, in Tábor. His crime? Having taken part in the student demonstration of February 1948, when the communists seized power.
I was 19 years old and joined the student demonstration leading to Prague Castle in support of President Beneš on February 25th. Our generation was brought up in a patriotic fashion, taught to hold dear family and country, and this was an expression of that. It was my misfortune that I was among those picked up and imprisoned.
Miroslav Ružička was sentenced as an enemy of the state in 1949. Besides being jailed, he was later given 2 years of forced labor. And finally, he was sent to the technical assistance battalions. He says that if Joseph Stalin and Clement Gottwald had not died, he and others might have ended up in the Gulag. And here's what he told me about the Pomocné technické prapory, known colloquially as the Black Barons.
Co jsme se tam dostali, některým jsme byli poměrně mladí.
Those of us who were younger weathered things better, but there were some who were in their 40s or 50s. Still, it was better than prison. In the early days, we were given old Nazi uniforms, and some still had splashes of blood. Members of the public thought at first we were Germans. In the unit, our commanding officer told us he would teach us the value of real work. We would shovel huge piles of sand and gravel in the courtyard from one spot to another. The officer would shout, "Chest Pratze," as a command, in honor of work. With each chest, we had to fill our shovels.
After he was released from the Technical Assistance Battalions, Miroslav Ružička managed to find employment and gradually to build something of a new life. Nevertheless, his family continued to suffer under the communists, and understandably it was relief when the former regime collapsed. To this day, he continues to lecture at schools to ensure younger generations learn more and are able to ask directly about the communist legacy.
Jan Wellinger with that report. An environmental organization has this week launched an ambitious new proposal to increase greatly the amount of land in the Czech Republic given over to untamed nature. In fact, the Czech branch of Friends of the Earth wants to see a full 3% of the country covered in wilderness, 10 times as much as now. Ian Willoughby asked the group's Vojtěch Kotecký why they were pushing for what would be a considerable change.
It will be an enormous opportunity for Czech and foreign tourists, so that it will be an interesting experience for thousands of people and also an enormous economic opportunity for neighboring communities, because thousands and thousands of tourists will visit them. At the same time, the project is extremely important for nature conservation, because it will create crucial habitats for many animal and plant species that depend on European wilderness as their habitat.
And would some of the land be used for commercial purposes, like, for example, logging?
We believe that the areas that will be left to wilderness should be off-limits for logging and other commercial activities. Only human impact in those areas should be restricted to tourism, building of tourist paths, shelters for tourists, information trails and similar projects.
What areas would you like to see become wilderness? I mean, what land do you have in mind and what's it currently being used for?
First of all, we already have 4 similar projects in this country. We already have 4 national parks, and each of them will leave substantial part of land to wilderness. And in addition to them, we propose that we should be looking for areas that are mainly forested, with many natural forests, so that we are not far away from wild nature as it used to be in the Czech Republic. And obviously we need to look for areas that do not have any communities in them. We need to avoid areas with any settlements.
I was reading that you were inspired by Germany and what Germany is doing in this regard. Is that the case?
Yes, Germany already decided to leave 2% of the country to wilderness by the end of this decade. But there are other projects in other European countries, whether it is England, Scotland, France, or even Netherlands. And if Netherlands, this heavily populated country, is able to find some areas that will be left to wilderness, then it should be no problem for countries like the Czech Republic.
Friends of the Earth is a small NGO, and you're calling for a full tenfold increase in wilderness in the Czech Republic. It may be a nice idea, but surely it's never going to actually happen.
We believe that it may happen. It will take years to prepare this project, and it must take years because it is a huge change. But at the same time, we believe that this ambition is realistic. We already achieved major environmental successes in this country. Friends of the Earth were behind the successful Czech Renewable Energy Act. We succeeded in pushing for other pieces of environmental legislation and for important decisions in nature conservation, and we believe that we can succeed in this case as well.
Vojtěch Kotecký of the Czech branch of Friends of the Earth talking there to my colleague Ian Willoughby. Just a reminder that you are listening to the International Service of Czech Radio broadcasting from Prague. Prague's Villa Bílek, an intriguing piece of modern architecture, has opened to the public after 2 years of renovation. Designed by the Czech Art Nouveau artist František Bílek as his studio and family home, it stands out as one of the more unusual architectural landmarks of the capital, reflecting Bílek's vision of a stronghold of a higher realm. In this edition of Panorama, Jan Richter visits the restored building.
The Art Nouveau style in the first decades of the 20th century left many traces in the Czech capital, such as the magnificent Obecní dům and the impressive main train station building. One piece of Art Nouveau architecture differs from the others, thanks to its symbolism and religious undertones. It is the villa designed by František Bílek, a symbolist sculptor, designer, illustrator and religious visionary. After 2 years of renovation work, the villa reopened for public at the end of September. It is run by Prague City Gallery and now houses an exhibition of Bílek's works, from sculptures to drawings and book illustrations. City Gallery's Eva Rybová took me around.
This is the studio where he actually worked. The other gallery room is a place where he wanted to store his works, which was an important thing for him. Maybe if you look at it, this might somehow remind you of a church architecture. It's on purpose because František Bílek wanted to build his studio and his villa not only as a natural environment for him where he could work and live, but also as something, as a spiritual temple. This may be proved by the fact that his own daughter, Berta, get married right here in this place.
The first thing that catches your eye as you approach the villa is the unusual elliptical shape of the building, complete with a row of massive columns inspired by ancient Egyptian architecture. It only took František Bílek a year to design the house, which Eva Rybová says put visitors in mind of a wheat field.
It really reminds you of grain stalks. Grain stalk can have three different meanings in symbolism. It may represent fertility. It's a very easy symbol of fertility. It may represent the earth as one of the elements, but also the Eucharistic symbol of Jesus Christ, which is something that really represents František Bílek's point of view.
František Bílek designed the house and everything in it. The fittings, the furniture, and every little detail. Eva Rybová says even the shape of the house has a higher significance.
Every single part in this building has its special meaning. You can see little symbols, for example, on a furniture, you can see little symbols of grain stalks. So this symbolism of a field, it's everywhere in this building. The building itself is shaped in a segment of ellipse, which, according to Bílek's own words, remind you of a swipe of a scythe reaping grain. So again, we are here in the iconography of fields.
František Bílek, a native of southern Bohemia, came to the capital to study at Prague's Academy of Fine Arts. But he was colorblind, so he soon switched to sculpture at another Prague school. He then went on to study in Paris. There he had a mystic vision, which had a profound impact on his work. Eva Rybová again.
All his life and his work was deeply influenced by his deep religious feelings. It wasn't all the time very easy for him to speak about his religion, because it was the way he understood it was a little bit different from how other people understood it. People used to call him a mystic because his way of understanding religion was very, very special. It was influenced by different or few visions he had when he was a little child and also when he was studying in Paris in 1890s. František Bílek in his personal writings describes several revelations where he speaks about actually seeing Jesus Christ.
Bílek's original religious ideas eventually drove him away from the Catholic Church. He also had to work hard to earn the recognition of Prague's art community, which at first did not consider him to be a good artist. Zdeněk Lukeš is a leading Czech architecture historian.
Bílek, in the beginning of his work, was not accepted by authorities here. But then, in that period, about 1910, he was a famous sculptor and very respected by experts and by people here. The house was, of course, unique because for his brick masonry and for the flat roof. It was the first house, modern house in Prague, with a flat roof. So as all these inspirations, including, for instance, Egyptian columns and so, that's why that house was very far from normal type of architecture. But on the other side, the era of bastions of Prague Castle was or is still full of very interesting houses from styles of Art Nouveau, historicism, or modern style, or even cubism in architecture, because one house there was designed by Josef Kočár in the style of cubism.
The Villa Bílek is located at number 1 Mickiewiczowa Street, which is just by Hradčany, or the Prague Castle Complex. Zdeněk Lukeš explains that Prague City Hall had a different idea of what to do with the area, which is also home to other remarkable buildings.
Bílek, in the beginning of his work, was not accepted by authorities here. But then, in that period, about 1910, he was a famous sculptor and very respected by experts and by people here. The house was, of course, unique because for his brick masonry and for the flat roof. It was the first house, modern house in Prague, with a flat roof. So as all these inspirations, including, for instance, Egyptian columns and so, that's why that house was very far from normal type of architecture. But on the other side, the era of bastions of Prague Castle was or is still full of very interesting houses from styles of Art Nouveau, historicism, or modern style, or even cubism in architecture, because one house there was designed by Josef Kočár in the style of cubism.
The 1910s and 20s was a very rich time for Prague and its architecture. Thanks to connections with Vienna and other cities in Central Europe, many famous architects worked in the Czech capital at the time.
It was a period of symbolism in art, especially in visual art, and I think that Bílek tried to bring these principles into architecture, and that's why something like this was created in that period. It was not so typical, and I think that we could say that very similar way is a way of Josip Plečník, famous Slovenian architect, who was also connected with Prague. But unfortunately, we don't know the reaction of Plečník on Bílek's house. But he was here in the same time. He went to Prague in 1911 to teach in School of Applied Arts. That's why that could be very interesting to know more about these connections.
Zdeněk Lukeš says Prague City Gallery has done a great job in restoring the villa to its original state. František Bílek designed another house right next to his villa. That house belonged to a friend of his, a doctor, and it symbolizes the autumn. It is now a private home, so we go back to the villa where Eba Rybová continues the tour.
Now we are standing in a dining hall. We are looking at a very light oak furniture, which is designed by František Bílek himself. We can see in a little details over here, again, the symbols that we were speaking about earlier, the symbols of grain stalks, the symbols of spiritual nature, let's say. Also, the vases that you see on the floors and on a table are designed by František Bílek himself. An interesting thing about the living area or about the whole villa is that there are no right angles. Any room is shaped in a rectangular form. It's because František Bílek, this is maybe something architect wouldn't do. František Bílek said that there are no right angles in the nature. And he somehow wanted to make a temple that would resemble as much as he could to the nature itself.
Back in Bílek's times, the area offered the artist the quietness and peace he needed for his thoughtful work. But what would he think of the place now, with all the bustling with cars and trams?
I cannot imagine František Bílek living in such a loud place or noisy place. Of course, there was not such a traffic as it is here. I'm not sure if there were trams at that time. I'm not sure about it. But yeah, it was definitely much more quiet area.
And that edition of Panorama by Jan Richter brings us to the end of today's program. This is Ruth Franková saying thanks for joining us today and take care. Thank you.